This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. New census figures show that rural America accounts for a smaller piece of the American pie, now just 1/6 of the country's population. And as the population dwindles, companies and agencies that serve these areas are reconsidering. The U.S. Postal Service may close thousands of postal facilities early next year. The Federal Aviation Administration may cut subsidies that keeps rural airports open, and budget cuts may hit country schools and clinics disproportionately. If that's where you live, tell us how your life is changing. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, the story of 17 mountaineers, a lightning storm, and a dramatic rescue mission in Wyoming a year ago. But first, changes in rural America. And let's see if we can start with a caller. Michael's on the line calling from Mount Sterling in Wisconsin.
Yeah, hello. The old gentleman came up to me in Mount Sterling, and he said to me, they're going to close their postal office. Where are we going to get together and talk? There's a bunch of old men that get together and talk there, and they're probably talking about wise things. But the thing is this, I was just listening to NPR just last weekend about solar flares and how they had one in 1890-whatever that was so strong that it could wipe out satellite systems, not to mention the threat of other countries wiping those out. And those systems are weak compared to horseback delivery. I mean, and I just don't think it should be eliminated.
A horseback delivery, you mean?
No, the horseback delivery. Yes, the rural areas. It should not be eliminated. It's a crucial infrastructure. Should this fragile electronic one go down?
So, if without that, you would be pretty isolated.
Yes, the whole world could be crippled, and it's silly how much money could be lost right there.
All right, Michael. Thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
This email we have from Ann in Atchison, Kansas. After 20 years in rural Kansas, my family decided to liquidate our business and sell our home. Part of the decision, based on economics. My family's health insurance is over $1,000 more annually than if we lived in Lawrence. Our internet service, food and gas, all more expensive than in Kansas City. We have no competition for our cell phone service. Our school choices are limited. Our local school district did not meet its No Child Left Behind goals. The arts funding has been cut. Property taxes will be going up as companies leave town. Yet we are fortunate that we can move, since we are highly educated and work in technology. Living in rural Kansas has always been challenging. Now it is becoming depressing. Joining us now is Dee Davis, president of the Center for Rural Strategies. He's with us from his office in Whitesburg, Kentucky, in southeastern Kentucky, right on the border with Virginia. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here.
And of the thousands of postal facilities that may be on the chopping block, more than 100 in Kentucky. What difference would that make?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's going to help. I understand that if they close 3,400 post offices, they're going to save $200 million. So that's the idea of a way that we save our economy, is we save that $200 million. I was just in Australia, where they've decided to invest $40 billion in a rural broadband rollout. They're building fiber all over the country. Now, that's a country the size of the continental United States with the population of Texas. And they see their economic future in connecting people and making sure that everybody gets a chance to compete. And we're looking at how can we shut down these post offices as a way to save money. I guess it's an approach and it might work, but I think it fundamentally betrays the idea that we're all working together, we're all able to pitch in.
What changes have you seen over the years in Whitesburg?
Well, Whitesburg has been consistently a town of around 1,500 for a long time, but these counties around here in the coal fields were much larger not that long ago. We've always been in boom and bust cycles that had to do with mining, and always more bust than boom. But what I've seen is that people have a kind of realism. They don't assume that things are going to change and get better. They don't expect things to be handed to them. And I think that what they also expect is that they'll get a fair shot. We've lost about half the mining jobs in the last 10 years, and we're scheduled to lose about half more in the next five. But that doesn't mean it's not a good place to live or that there's no alternatives. I think people are trying to figure out just how they can make a living and how they can do better. And that's not really different from a lot of rural parts of the country where we've traditionally depended on extractive industry.
Do you people there in Whitesburg feel isolated?
I don't think so. I mean, we're connected in lots of ways to the world. I think that we're not so far away, but I think it is important to think about how we could be better connected. The truth of it is that the country's hit a rough patch right now, and it's really time to begin to think about how we could reimagine this idea of an inclusive nation so that more people could pitch in, more people could be connected. Broadband is one of the important ways to do it, but there's lots of ways that we could begin to help turn the economy around. We could begin to create jobs around sustainable energy, wind, solar, biomass. There's lots of ways that we could begin to transform this economy, and rural's got a role to play in that. So I think what's important is to begin to think about how we can all pitch in, and it's really a time when everybody's needed, all the people and all the places, and we can't do that if we keep thinking about what's a little bit of an extra cost or what's the profit center. We got to begin to reimagine how we're all going to contribute.
You say losing jobs over the last decade. When jobs leave, young people seem to leave, and that's, statistically across the country, that's the picture. And when young people leave, people stop seeing a future.
Well, we traditionally thought of this economic theory that had to do with critical mass, about bringing people together, that we assumed that that's the way all economies are going to work. But we never thought of location, location, location being your website. I think that the promise of what we can do, and if we really begin to develop knowledge industries and to begin to think about how more people can contribute, is that we can begin to open up the economy to other influences, let more people in, and we can all begin to help each other even if we don't live next door.
Dee Davis, thanks very much, and good luck to you and to Whitesburg.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Dee Davis, president of the Center for Rural Strategy there in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Let's see if we go next to Robert, and Robert's with us from Cernley in Nevada.
Hi.
And which part of Nevada is Cernley?
It's about 30 miles east of Reno.
East of Reno, so headed out towards the desert there.
Yep, out in the desert.
And what's happening in Cernley?
Recently we were had a possibility of having to go to four-day school week, and to keep it five-day, we were going to have to pay a sort of tax or something to pay for the fifth day. And it was a big uproar in our small community. Is only about 15,000-20,000 people in Fernley, and they just last week fixed it, so we're not going to have to pay for a fifth day. And I just think that education and schools and rural are like top of the chopping block, and they should be getting a lot more attention than post offices closing, I believe.
What do people do in Cernley?
Try to get by, pretty much. It's a pretty hard hit from the jobs and everything, and I think our unemployment rate in Lyon County is over 14%, and so most people travel to into Reno to work, or the industrial area out here in the desert in between Reno and Fernley.
And Reno, like Las Vegas, not doing too well.
No, it's not a safe haven, that's for sure.
Well, good luck, and glad you're going to have that fifth day of school.
Thank you.
Email from Roger in Sanborn, New Hampshire. We chose to move to central New Hampshire where there are no neighbors to be seen. If you can see your neighbor's smoke, it's time to move on. A fellow up the road has gone to a town meeting many times to fight the suggestions that we improve the road. This road is a single-lane dirt road. When I bought the house, I knew that the road was dirt, so why would I want it changed? But folks keep coming here and building McMansions. Now they're not happy. Some of those quotes from a song from the musical Paint Your Wagon, the first thing you know, if nothing else, Roger concludes, it's a cute little tune. Let's see, we go next to Judy, and Judy's with us from McCall in Idaho.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in McCall, Idaho, which is a majority of the homes are second homes to people that live elsewhere. And so it's kind of a vacation community, a resort community. My husband worked with Tamarack Resort, which went bankrupt in 2008, and over 400 people lost their jobs, and has not been able to find another job since then.
Is there tension between the people who are consider themselves a real McCall residents and the you forgive the expression, summer people?
Yeah, there's kind of a class separation. You know, we're the working people, and the people that come here to vacation definitely have a different attitude towards life, I think. It appears that life is a little easier for them.
Yet
right now, the locals are pretty much struggling.
But if those richer people weren't coming by, there wouldn't be much going on, I don't think.
Correct. Most of the jobs that the local people have are the service industry, where we take care of the city and the roads and all the services, or work in the restaurants and gas stations and so forth.
Well, Judy, good luck to you and to McCall.
Okay, thank you.
We're talking about the heartland. If you live in rural America, we want to know how your life is changing as population dwindles in many places. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. The wide swaths of rural America where the crops and cows that feed the country checker the landscape are changing. Per the census, there are fewer people living there, and the average age of those who do is on the rise. Recreational areas where seniors head to retire are doing fairly well, but on the whole, the percentage of folks living outside cities has dropped. If you live in a quiet part of the country where your neighbors are miles, not inches away, tell us how your life is changing. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And we have this email from Anna in Brookings, South Dakota. The economic situation in rural America is tough, but there are great positive changes happening, too. I work for a grassroots local foods and sustainable farming nonprofit called Dakota Rural Action. We see more and more people in their 20s and 30s moving to the Plain States to live out their values. Prosperity for them is about sustainable, balanced lifestyle. And in this way, the Dakotas are becoming richer and richer. Joining us now from Anchorage in Alaska is Kyle Hopkins, who covers rural affairs for Anchorage Daily News, with us from member station KSKA in Anchorage. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, good to be here.
And Alaska, I guess like that writer from that part of South Dakota, gaining population.
There's some gains. I mean, it's a place that people want to be. It's a place that people want to visit. You know, I wouldn't say that we've seen a dramatic increase in population. It's still a tiny state, and if growing, only slowly growing.
And is it growing in the city that many people call Los Anchorage?
Los Anchorage. I mean, that's the kind of the place it would be growing, either here or on the outskirts, the suburbs of Alaska where Sarah Palin's from, you know, what's called the Matanuska Valley. But those people would probably be working here in Anchorage and living just outside the city.
Well, as the rural affairs correspondent, what stories are you working on?
Well, I mean, I'm a reporter at the Anchorage Daily News. I don't cover as much rural affairs stories as I used to. you know, typically in the past, you know, something I have covered a lot in the past over the past few years. I might write about just strange things that happen in remote Alaska villages that might not happen other places. You know, if someone is attacked by a bear or mauled by a bear in Nome, I would write about that. If there's a rash of suicides in these small Alaska Native villages, I might write about that.
You did write about that, and as part of the story, you said basically the suicide rate in Alaska about double what it is elsewhere.
Absolutely. It's statewide, it's double the rest of the nation. But what's important to note is that within the smaller communities, I mean, if we're talking about the really remote rural communities, villages where, you know, the only way that you're going to get there is you're going to fly there. You can't drive. You know, you might be able to take a snow machine. You might be able to take a boat. But these are places that are very isolated from even from me here down here in the city of Anchorage. The rates there are much, much higher. I mean, we're talking like 4, 5, 6 times the national average.
How do people stay connected?
They stay connected the same way that everyone else, you know, in the rest of the lower 48 does. You know, they get on Facebook, right? They tweet. I mostly keep in touch with my friends in kind of the remote parts of the state just by looking at their Facebook page and seeing if they posted a picture of a seal hunt, right? Or you know, maybe the ice going out on the ocean.
Well, that's not the normal stuff that most of us have on our Facebook pages. You grew up in Alaska.
I did. I'm from Southeast Alaska. I was born in a town called Sitka, which, if you saw the movie The Proposal, mm-hmm. Sandra Bullock, that's based. It wasn't actually shot there, but that's the town that it was based on. And so I'm from the Panhandle part, which is a little bit closer to Seattle than kind of the northern part. But, you know, I went to high school in a town with, you know, where I had like a dozen kids in my graduating class and I'm from, you know, small town, Alaska.
You also left to come to the lower 48 for a while, but changed your mind and went back. How come?
That's what everybody does. I mean, show me somebody who left and then never came back. I mean, it happens, right? But most people I know who I grew up with or who I kind of knew, you know, older, you know, as I got older in college, a lot of them, they leave. But at some point you see them back in Anchorage or Fairbanks. And I think people, it's nice to go outside and get a perspective of what life is like in the rest of the country. But, this is a fun place to live and people tend to come back here.
Do you think you'll ever leave?
Oh, I don't know. I'm raising a 2-year-old here, and when I go to pick her up at grandma's house, and this is like in the middle of the city, right? This is Alaska's biggest city, but when I go to pick her up, I might on the drive home, you know, we might see a couple moose in somebody's yard eating a tree or something. We'll stop and we'll look at that, and that's pretty awesome. And I don't, you know, show me a place that's better to live than that.
Well, congratulations! Thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Kyle Hopkins joined us from member station KSKA in Anchorage, where he covers rural affairs for the Anchorage Daily News. Let's go next to Deirdre. Deirdre with us from Henderson in Kentucky.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling to reinforce what some of your other callers have said about the positive parts of rural America. I moved back to the farm that I was raised on when my son entered kindergarten, and he's now 17. He's writing his college essay about being raised on a farm. So he can speak to having raised a deer since she was a fawn. She came in the house and ate blueberries, and we'd had to shoo her out to go to school. And I think what I've seen is that even though we live in a rural community, many of the other of his peers have never been fishing, have never ridden a horse, don't know how to identify a crop in the field, and it's sad to me how disengaged rural people can be from their own environment.
Disengaged from their own environment, not taking advantage of the things that are, well, everybody else would consider attractions.
Yes, and so it's a joy when we're getting ready for harvest here in a month or two, and you know, a combine ride would be like an amusement park thrill. It truly is. And, you know, we're lucky because we literally get to see things change over the seasons, over the years, and it's not a manicured front yard in suburbia, but it is absolutely, it certainly has shaped who he is, aside from his work ethic, he is one of the privileged. I told your screener, I mean, less than 2% of the American population lives on a working farm.
And what do you grow on your farm?
Primarily corn and soybeans, sometimes winter wheat. And, you know, the crops are rotated. So right now my view is of corn that's 9 feet tall.
9 feet tall, my gosh.
9 feet tall because it had to be totally replanted this spring because of floods. I mean, we have calamity.
Different order of magnitude, different set of priorities, I should say.
Yes.
Deirdre.
So it's a very positive thing, even with the trade-offs that we make.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email, or excuse me, a tweet from Diana. We live in Glade Park, Colorado. Wouldn't want to live anywhere else but drive 13 miles for mail, super slow internet via Verizon. School district cut our school, now going charter. No landlines for phone or internet. Verizon is the only game in town. Our rural area is not losing population, but trending to McMansions. Let's go next to Wolf, and Wolf with us from Alma in Arizona.
That's actually Arkansas.
Arkansas, excuse me.
I run two businesses in rural Arkansas. One is a printing company, and it's doing poorly. It reflects the economy, as a printing company is a kind of a canary in the coal mine and a service to other businesses. But my other business, which I run 3 days a week in a town not far away, is skydiving, and it's booming.
Really?
And also, and I think the reason that it's booming is, you know, we're busier than we've ever been. We've been doing this for 20 years. Is I think it's the economy is bad. You can't afford, you know, folks can't afford to take their family to Florida for a week, but they can afford a $200 thrill ride. I mean, that's just my thoughts on it.
What kind of plane do you use?
Actually, I have three aircraft, two Cessna 182s and a 1959 Beech 18 twin.
And you take people up how high before you push them out of a perfectly good airplane?
Oh, generally between 9 and 11,000 feet.
And how long does that drop take?
Free fall is going to be 30 seconds or so. Canopy ride, 5 to 7 minutes.
And people come down feeling pretty good about themselves?
I had a Baptist preacher said that was the most fun he'd ever had with his clothes on.
Well, that's an endorsement for you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Wolf. Good luck
to you. Bye-bye.
Kelly Snowden joins us now from her office in Nacogdoches in Texas, where she's a program manager at the Center for Regional Heritage Research at Stephen F. Austin University in Nacogdoches. She lives about an hour from there in a town just over a tenth that size, Overton, Texas. Kelly Snowden, nice to have you on the program today.
Hey, how are you?
I read a piece that you wrote, and you said the first time you drove into Overton, you thought you were seeing a town that was drying up and blowing away.
Sometimes first impressions really aren't inaccurate.
What's it like?
Overton is a small town of about 2,300 people. It was hit hard over the in the 80s and has been in an economic downturn. We do have a lot of vacant buildings. Most are privately owned that are up for sale. Some are for sale, some aren't. It's difficult to do anything about economic redevelopment in Overton because the people don't want to turn loose of these structures. You know, they want to sell them. They, I think, ask too much for them. But so we're kind of stalled right now in terms of economic development. But we have about 30 businesses, things ranging from, you know, our two funeral homes to a couple of boutiques, things like that.
But stalled on a couple of, well, it seemed to be fairly simple civic projects, putting another picnic table in the park and building some replacement concrete steps from the parking lot back up to the school.
Right. That's from that Photo Voice project that I conducted in Overton. And those are small things that can be conducted at the community level, at the grassroots level. And we're hoping to get those off the drawing board and into action. With every little step we make, we can build momentum. So we're going to start small and move forward.
And yet there are still problems every time a business closes. The flower store that had been there for so long, it seems like you're losing part of the community.
Yes. The longer a business has been there, the more attached people are to it. The people that run it are your friends. And economic development in a rural area is very personal. It's not, you know, in a city, you know, when you see a big store closing, you don't tend to think of the individuals. In a rural area, you think of the individual owner and the few employees they have and what it means when that business closed down. And not only job loss, but a loss of a service to the community.
And at this point, is the community, at some point, you lose, you know, critical mass.
That's very true. And one of the jobs in economic development when you're dealing with a small town like Overton is to see if you can help that town reengage its identity, find itself again, so to speak. And that has to be done at the grassroots level. You can't bring in a big box store and do that. It has to come from the heart of the community.
You talked about something called heritage tourism, where towns like Overton can try to attract people to visit by attracting them through their cemetery?
That's a possibility. Heritage tourism can certainly be a part of your economic landscape. It's not going to be your driving sector by any means. But sure, Gladewater has been fairly successful with antiques tourism and heritage tourism. There are examples of this throughout East Texas, but it's never the lead. It's part of the overall service sector. But you can get it going. If you get the momentum going, you can pull in other complementary activities to support it, such as motels and cafes and things like that. The trick is getting it done and getting the word out there, getting people to know about what you're doing.
And are you confident in the future of Overton?
I want to be. I really do want to be confident. Overton's a nice little town. It deserves a second chance. There are some people in the community that are working very hard to try and reinvigorate the population. They've started a small farmers market, and it only has a couple of people right now, but it's a first step. There's a where a building burned down, they've created a public space, which is where the farmers market is, and they have bands that come in on the weekends. So, you know, we have a small group of very active individuals who are trying to get people to believe in their community again.
Well, good luck. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Kelly Snowden with us today from her office in Nacogdoches, Texas. You can find a link to her piece about the town where she lives, Overton, on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Angie. Angie with us from Shawnee in Kansas.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually from a small town called Butler, Missouri. And whenever I graduated, I was going to say I graduated in 2001. And after I left, the sports began to decline. Kids were more involved with drugs. When I went back to visit, there were no high schoolers going to football games. And then in the past couple of years, the school saw that this was happening. And they asked the small business owners in the community to help out and started a program called Bear Backers. And bear as in B-E-A-R. They have pooled money together to buy new uniforms for the sports teams. The high schoolers go to the games now. The business owners go to the games, even if they don't have children in the high school. And every single class now has a float, I hear, at the homecoming parade. When I went, there were only a handful of people who went to those parades in the past few years. And now the whole community supports the high school. So even though the high school didn't have the resources to bring the community together, just asking made it possible.
That sounds great.
And that's a town of about 4,000 to 6,000 people.
Angie, thanks very much for the call. Nice to hear about the revival there.
Yeah, thank you.
This from Gail in Davis, California. Interesting to note the trends taking place in most of rural America with regard to population movements are the opposite in California, where our rural regions are experiencing population influxes, but funding streams and federal support are being cut still in rural California. A part of this is the redesignation of rural regions in California to what the government calls metropolitan regions. As a result, some of California's rural communities are caught in the middle. They are getting fewer rural development dollars while experiencing rural challenges. The Central Valley has some of the highest unemployment, housing foreclosure, and crime rates in the country. This from Chris in Laramie. I recently moved to Wyoming for a job. I wouldn't ever want to leave. I love the feelings of freedom and self-reliance that the low population engenders. The relatively few inconveniences of living away from a major city are far outweighed by the benefits of a slower pace of life and greater general happiness. Well, stay with us. When we come back, another story from Wyoming, as it happens, Grand Teton and lightning and mountain climbers. A dramatic rescue is involved as well. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.